I'm Lucy Barkas, and this is the Leader X podcast, focusing on the future of work. In my book, Leader X, I share my 5 Mys methodology, a way to lead organization and teams. My legacy is all about what you want to create, the impact you want to have on your people, your customers, and ultimately the world around you. It's all about your purpose. It's the opportunity to dream, to vision, to strategize. But how do you do this when everything is so unpredictable and fast changing? In this series, I welcome futurists, people who hang out in possibilities of the future of work. I ask them about what's coming up. The goal is to inspire you, to challenge you, and to help you think bigger about your impact, your legacy. Leaders always start with the end in mind and then strategize, innovate, and find ways to make it a reality. The 5 Mys method will help you achieve it. So head to the website to sign up to the 3WH newsletter, where those who are serious about leadership now and in the future will get the tools, tips, and methods to be the leader they wish they'd always had. And coming up, how the great outdoors and sailing a boat can really ignite your team spirit. Today, my guest is David Wheatley of Humenergy. He's a leadership coach, trainer, speaker, and podcast host with over 20 years' experience supporting individuals and groups in leadership and building high-performing teams. I think he may be my brother from another mother. So David, he's worked with presidential appointees, CEOs, frontline leaders, co-authored a 50 Do's of Everyday Leadership, and he's just released What Great Teams Do Great. In 2015, he sailed the Atlantic in a 39-foot boat with his wife and 2 friends, so I'm sure he's got some great experiences and stories to tell us from that. So I welcome David to the show and to discuss teamwork, which is even more relevant now that most teams are hybrid, remote. Few have gone back to working normal hours, but you know what teamwork is and how we do it is changing. And I also just want to let you know his tagline, his business mission, which I loved, which was Humenergy as an organization stands with people who strive to make the world a better place, or at least their corner of it. So welcome, David. Thank you for joining us today. And I believe you're over the pond in Michigan.
I am. And I get corrected or got corrected to call it Michigan. Oh. It took me a lot of time to get to that because we all grew up in England calling it Michigan.
Ah, but it's so, a Michigan. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And, thank you for having me on.
Oh, no, I'm really excited. And especially as I introduced you, I said, you're like a brother from another mother because, the work that we do and the path that we've followed have ended us in the same place. But there's always a different journey and your journey will be very different to mine. So why don't you just tell me and the listeners a little bit about how you got doing the work that you're doing and why teams?
Well, I'll do the short version because we could be here for weeks otherwise. But I was a whitewater kayaker when I was at high school, and I taught whitewater kayaking at a summer camp up in the Lake District, north of England, and then went in the Metropolitan Police, which over here people know it as Scotland Yard, but over there you'll know it as the Police Force for London. And there was a couple of instances in the 80s where the police were using the outdoors to develop leadership. And I got a call one day from one of these instructors saying, hey, you've got the right bits of paper. Do you fancy a day on the river rather than on the beat? Because we've got these 10 or 12 senior leaders who are going out on the river. We've got a facilitator and we need somebody to do the safety and they need the bits of paper. And so it was like, sure, I'll take a day of doing that. And I did this a couple of times and found myself kind of listening to what the facilitator asked and thinking I could come up with a better question. And so then I left the police and continued some education. And it was a hybrid of learning at one college and paddling across Lake Windermere to another college where I was doing leadership development, again, mostly based in the outdoors and with groups. And then came over here for a job in 1996. And that outdoor stuff has transitioned mostly indoors. And most of it these days is over Zoom. But it's still the same route, which is you've got people looking to learn. And if I ask a good question, it helps move them down the path. And so it's just been a kind of organic trip down a life's river where I've stuck my paddle in every so often and paddled a little harder at different times. But it's all rooted back to a blend of whitewater kayaking and being able to ask good questions.
Oh, that's so cool. And I must say, in my own coaching, I use the water a lot, but I use it as a metaphor, an analogy. And if we are outdoors, I'll always try and find some water for them just to gaze out at, because when I'm sat side by side and looking out to the water, we've got the River Severn here, so that's a great place to go. But it just changes people. And the other really interesting thing is I'm actually a scout leader. So we're always doing outbound kind of stuff. And pre-pandemic, whenever I had the opportunity, I would always take teams outside building something or making something or doing something, because I just love being outdoors. And so do they. It changes their geography. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will tell, I spend a lot of time working with people in offices and things like that. But it's not unusual to say, why don't you just go for a walk around the building? Just go outside, have a walk, take a walk. I'm fortunate enough to live on 10 acres of woodland, and we have a mile of trails out in my backyard. And so three times a day, usually when I'm in the office here, I'll get out there with the dog. Sometimes the dog stays at home because she's getting old, but I'll walk in the woods. And the Japanese have a great concept of forest bathing, which is meditational. And you just to be out there and thinking and you know, in tune with what's around you. And then you come back feeling refreshed.
Yeah, I totally get that. And my best ideas always happen when I'm out walking. And it could be a 5-minute stroll, or it could be, you know, going for an 8-hour hike. But yeah, I feel changed from doing it. And it's really interesting. I've said this a number of times to my clients. I don't do meditation. I find that really, really hard. But for me, I become really mindful when I'm walking. And the times I know I'm in my own head is when I can't hear the birds singing. Yeah. And then it forces me just to tune in and say, right, I'm in my head. So, yeah, I love the fact that you've got this activity and this nature base and can bring it in, because it's something that I'm really passionate about. So, but your book, tell me about that, because it's all about teams. And it's your chance to promo the book, I guess. And then just tell me about, you know, why teams? Why is it so important for you?
Well, as you know, in this world, if you are working with clients, there start to be some themes to the work. And quite often it's our coaching work that generates some ideas, as somebody has a problem and you're asking them the same kinds of questions. And then you start to log those questions and you start to see patterns. And lo and behold, 2 years later, a book is created based on some of these patterns. And so we've been doing the work over here for 25 years. And those patterns have emerged around what the difference is between a team that works and a team that doesn't. And there's a few important things that we've found that are really essential in it. So it's not a very big book. It's a short, pithy book that just points out the bits that people tend to skip over. And for example, one of them is taking time to set up the team right. So, and the setup asks four simple questions. Do we know who we are? And not just, you know, hi, you're Lucy, I'm David, but what you bring to the table, what your skill set is, what your preferences are, what your style is, you know, those kinds of things. So we actually know who we've got on the team. The second question goes to, do we understand our current reality? Then the third question is obvious. What are we trying to achieve and why? And the fourth question is kind of interesting, because it's a more unusual one, which is, what are our non-negotiable expectations for working together? And I try to get people to come up with between 4 and 10 of these. Don't go much beyond that, because you're getting into some of the details of the planning and things. But what are the expectations? And a great example of that is that came from one of my clients, is no surprises. And I said, well, what do you mean by no surprises? And he said, well, if people tell me something's going wrong and they knew about it 2 weeks ago, we have a problem. So proactive communication is the other side of that, which is, if something's going wrong, come and tell me. And maybe we can work together to alleviate the impact of that, but don't tell me after it's happened, because then we have a problem.
Yeah, oh, I love that. It's so simple, that principle. But the beauty of it is getting those people around the table to actually have those meaningful conversations. And in my work, I call it the rules of engagement. Like, what are the boundaries? What's a hard yes and what's a hard no? And the stuff that's a bit grey, okay, how are we going to navigate this? Because honestly, it saves so much time and energy later on down the road. And I really liked your point number one, which was actually just get the people to know each other. Yeah. And often we end up having to do these team building sessions, 6 months later when things are fractured. And then people say, well, I never knew that about you. Like, what are you doing every day? Actually, if you do it from day one in that formation stage, it just unites and builds that trust. And you know, I suppose it's that peer-to-peer pressure almost, because I like you, I respect you, I'm not going to let you down.
I don't have to like you. I just have to know you well enough to respect you and know that you're going to follow through on what you said you're going to do.
Yeah.
And we can work well together. But and one of my favorite quotes is the idea that we don't make time to do it right, but we always find time to do it over. And this really resonates with these four questions, because if we don't ask them up front and make the time up front, we'll be forced to make the time to come back to it later. And it may be too late, because if you've already started clashing with somebody, it's going to be really hard to get back aligned as to what the expectations are and understanding and valuing what they're bringing to the table.
Now, one of the things that always intrigues me with people like myself and you who work in the team sphere, we've generally had some experience of working in some brilliant teams, which is why we believe in this stuff, but also some really bad teams. Now, you mentioned, obviously, you worked for the Met. And so you'd have been thrown together with all kinds of different people and probably different projects or missions or whatever you called them, you know, so with different people all the time. But you also had to have that trust that you had each other's backs. So what did you learn from forming those teams really quickly that can be translated into the real working world?
And I thought your question that you sent me earlier that kind of alludes to this, that, and you'll like where this one goes, is that the first real teams that I was engaged with were in my teens as a sea cadet. So I wasn't a scout, but my dad ran the lead sea cadet unit, and so I joined the sea cadets when I was 12.
Well, I'll let you know, we're sea scouts, so we still wear the hats.
That's good.
Carry on.
So the sea cadets was my place from 12 to 18, where I did everything, and I grew up with a bunch of folks that I still have contact with, and more so than school in some ways. I played five-a-side soccer in the winter, and then I was on what they called a pulling team, which is rowing, in the summer. And it was usually pretty much the same five or six or seven folks that were on those teams. And so, you know, some would transition off and on at different years because of age, but we grew up on that team together. And so you look at some of those form questions, the start, the setup questions, we knew each other. We knew what made us tick. We knew what would make us go a little wild. We knew how to motivate each other. We knew what each other wanted. And so you knew which ones to shout at and which ones to be quiet at and which ones to be disappointed in amongst each other. And so those are the formulative teams that really I grew up in, that taught me how to be a team player and how to value the synergy that comes from a set that works really well. And we were fortunate enough, both with the five-a-side soccer and the rowing, to go to the national finals on a number of occasions because it ticked. And that's really where that route comes from.
And there's nothing more satisfying than being on a team, being a team member, when it feels like that, when everything does just click together and you start achieving success. And that's why I sort of alluded to that the people who believe in this work have usually experienced it, and they know that it's not just about the results. People just feel better. They feel acknowledged. They feel like a sense of belonging. And that's what gives me the joy through doing this work, trying to help people achieve that. But it always, there's always something in somebody's early life that, you know, makes that light bulb moment, even if they don't reconnect with it until many years later. And sport is often, you know, the thing, because you've got a very clear goal.
Well, and there's five guys in exactly the same boat next to you, and five guys in your boat, exactly the same equipment, and you can literally pull away from them. And you wonder what the difference is, and it's that team being in tune with each other. If you lined us up, we weren't all muscular, you know, toned people. We all looked the same. The difference was how well it worked together. And I've heard people say that, you know, you get a good team working together, it's like there's an extra player on the field. And in my mind, that's synergy. And that's what you get when the sum of the parts creates something bigger.
So just tell me, I read on your, I think it might have been on your website, that you decided to sail across the Atlantic with your wife and a couple of other people. How did that team dynamic go? Because I'm sure you had some beautiful sunrises and sunsets, but some pretty rough moments there too.
That was interesting. I've talked about this in numerous places, but you look at the crew, they were very different people. So the skipper was a guy I'd worked at the summer camps with. He joined the Met when I did. I actually lived in his house for a while. And one of the reasons he said yes to me was because he knew he could live with me, because he'd done that before. And he said yes to my wife because he figured if she can live with him, I can live with her too. and then the fourth person, Tony, had also worked at the summer camp, but has a different kind of character. He's I would always describe him as your stereotypical kind of 50s, 60s British officer. And sometimes he would tell the best stories ever, and you'd wonder how much of it was true. And the more you get to know him, the more you question that. and one of the biggest issues was the difference between Tony and Launda, my wife. Launda had not been on a sailing boat before she got on that boat to sail the Atlantic. And there was this interesting growth as she got the hang of the fact that he didn't always have the right answer, even though he might assume he did. And that that Keith was the consummate teacher and coach, the skipper, who would guide and let people fail and let people learn. The thing I learned was to not fix things for her, because that was a natural tendency. One of the things that became obvious was that that wasn't helping. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get out of the way. And so we got a great picture of all of us about three quarters of the way across. And you could see things were ticking. Then there were some issues, but we dealt with it. Partially because we had no choice.
Yeah.
There was no, okay, it's time for you to get off now. It's a matter of we have to deal with this and we have to make do and make the best of it to get everybody across in a successful way.
Oh, no, it must have been an amazing experience. And I'm guessing some of those lessons that you and your wife learned, you're still using today. So you're not rushing in to fix her all the time. That's amazing.
Yeah, I try my best not to. And we're eagerly awaiting Keith buying a new boat to do it all again.
Oh, definitely. You must. You must. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and tell your friends all about it. We want to excite a whole new generation about how to lead in the decades ahead. Catch up on previous episodes where we cover topics from office design, AI, mental health, and how to hold great meetings. And coming up next is Andrea Newton, who will share her powerful story about how to have those really difficult conversations. Now, one of the things that's really interesting is obviously through the pandemic, a lot of people have started reassessing their lives. And thinking about these big projects like what you've just described. But the other side of it is the serious business of work. And, you know, for some people obviously have had to go into their workplace every day. And, you know, a huge majority were working remotely. And, you know, all the data's coming in, the employers want to go back to the old world and the employees just don't, you know, they're happy with either remote or hybrid. Now that causes some kind of friction for teams. And especially when you've got some people in, some people not, and all that kind of stuff. So what advice would you give leaders trying to navigate teamwork in the new world order?
I guess there's a couple of things that come to mind. One of them comes from one of my clients who have gone through every job in the organization and have defined it in one of four ways. And it's either it's permanently on site, it's they call it mobile, which means that they're going to be around at various facilities that they have. It's what's the middle one? It's a hotel or a hot desking. That means that, and those second and third ones are something like a 3-2 hybrid at the office, not at the office. And then the fourth one is permanently remote. And they've put that very clear. And it's basically, if you're permanently remote, that's 95% of the time you're at home. And the couple of times a year that we have a team event, we may ask you to come in. If you're in those two in the middle, we expect that it's going to be somewhere around 60-40, 40-60. And in some cases, there needs to be coverage, so you have to coordinate, but we're expecting that hybrid. And if you're mostly required at the office, then you will have a location. And we will give you a space to sit and do work, and that's your space. Doesn't mean you're 100%. Occasionally that opportunity arises, but it probably means that the role is more conducive to you being on site. So a lot of my manufacturing people, you obviously can't be off site if you're running a machine. In credit union banking, you can't be off site if you're running a teller window and people are expecting to come up to you for cash. So so those kinds of things. That's the first thing is, by defining it, you're actually putting clarity to the role expectations. And then the second thing is to not be lazy. And I'm being a little contentious with that, but I think that being remote, being on Zoom, everything that we've done in the last 18 months, we can replicate everything we have face-to-face with good intention. What happens is we get lazy. And so the excitement about being back in the office for some people is, oh, I can have all of those stop-in organic conversations where I just swing by your office and interrupt you to ask you a question. And if you break that down, you realize that in interrupting somebody, you're undermining their ability to get the work done. And you wouldn't naturally, I mean, you might naturally do that, but it doesn't naturally add value. And so what you would do if the door was shut, you wouldn't swing by and just burst in. You'd send them a note and say, hey, when you got 5 minutes, let's chat about something and leave them to it. Well, why can't you do that if you're remote, to just send them a Slack or email, whatever, text saying, well, you've got 5 minutes sometime today. I'd love to set up a Zoom so we can have the chat. And so that idea of we can emulate those organic conversations being remote, but we need to not be lazy about it. We need to be intentional about it so that we can maintain that.
I think that's so important, this being conscious and actually being able to name those behaviors. And I think that's where, going back to your four points, you know, what are the hard no's and hard yeses, so to speak? These are some of the things that you can start bringing up in the conversations. You know, how do we communicate with each other? What systems do we use? You know, how do you like to work? Are you a morning person? Are you better to have the meetings in the afternoon? You know, after you've had your long commute, what do you need in the mornings? And having those kind of relationships, getting to know your team members, regardless of where they are, is just going to mean that things just work better. And exactly. Otherwise, you do become lazy. You just expect everybody to work the way you do. And nobody else works like you.
Yeah, and that's the key to any team and any leader, isn't it? That the better you understand the people on your team, the easier it is to get the most out of them and the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know, this year was my first year of actually hiring through remote, leading through remote. And to this date, I've still not met the team members in real person. And it taught me so much about how to actually, you know, create that team in that environment. Because I've done the hybrid and I've done the face-to-face. Now I can say I am, you know, a remote leader. And I've got to say, I found it really, really easy. But I think it's because I did those four things that you described from day one. Even actually in the interview process, we were discussing, how do you like to work? Tell me about yourself. What's a hard no and hard yes for me? And I was sharing mine. And we realized, actually, this could work together. Mm-hmm. So I think it's even, you know, before that team formation, I think it's part of, once you understand this approach to teamwork, it's thinking about it in the recruitment process, the hiring process too.
Yeah, and it expands your thinking. We just hired a new business and marketing manager. Our previous person is retiring, and we're based in Michigan. Most of our work is probably in the greater Midwest area, with a few shootouts here and there. And our new business marketing manager lives in LA. And one of the challenges was, well, should they be in Michigan so that when we go back to having team meetings that they can come? Because we don't have an office. We're a completely remote organization now. And the question was, well, why?
Yeah.
Because are we really going to go back to having monthly team meetings in a location, or are we going to stay on Zoom for most of them where it's working? And maybe twice a year, we might try and have a gathering where everybody comes to the same place. But then that's a ticket from LA and a hotel night. And you know, that if we're expanding our potential pool, maybe we'll get much better candidates by that expansion. And rather than having a poorer candidate because we don't want to pay for a plane ticket and a hotel night.
You see, for me, that's the beauty of this kind of work. If you get it right, then there's only upsides.
Yeah.
Yes, there are some downsides, but there's always a solution to help you get through that. Everything else is just upside, especially when you're trying to attract the younger generations who, you know, they've sampled it and they're just thinking, why would I want to work any other way? And I think it's only going to get even more impactful maybe 5-10 years from now, where you've got a whole generation who've actually done their education at home.
Yeah.
And that's just completely, you know, knocked down all the walls about how we teach, how we learn, how we bond. You know, my daughter would be there like doing her class, and she'd have one of her best friends who was in her class on her screen there, and they would be chatting, and then they'd be sending each other messages and listening to the teacher and doing assignments. And I just thought, wow, these people, when they enter the workforce in another 5-10 years, they're going to really transform it. And they're not going to think, you know, what, we have to have a desk and we have to be sat here and we have to behave like this. It's exciting.
And the flip side of that goes back to where we started, which is I think they're also going to need more space to meditate and disconnect, because, you know, the quality of their attention to the professor while they're chatting back and forth isn't as good as it would be if they were just focused on the professor. And so that busyness and that sense needs the kind of yin to the yang.
That's what I kept telling her. She wouldn't listen to me.
Yeah, you can't tell the kids of today anything, no. Can you?
So, but yeah, so this, it does excite me, but I think you're absolutely spot on. I think there's still so much that our generation, and maybe, you know, even the millennials who will be their leaders by the time they come in, can teach them about this is how we do work, and still being playful and curious, but also, you know, being able to be their mentors and their coaches and their guides too.
Yeah, it's just the intention again, isn't it, that I, rather than just swinging by and saying how you are, I need to schedule that time to swing by and say how you are, and set up a Zoom in order to do it. But you know, just getting to know people that way. And it's been interesting seeing the evolution of people's backgrounds on Zoom.
Yes.
And how people have more personalized it. Some people have gone to it's plain. The people that started off with the artificial background of the beach have gone away from that to something that's more curated, you know, and what they want to share and what they want to show. And, you know, I'm sat in my office here with outside this window, it's a mess. You know, but I plan this window knowing that this is the view. And I do the same thing when I'm doing one-on-one coaching. I'm always want to have a look and say, oh, you got, it looks like a little one on the window ledge. You know, let's talk about who the little one is. Is this granddaughter, daughter? What's going, you know, and you make the connection that way. So you get to know each other. Let's have a look at your books, things like that. What have you obviously got there?
Yeah, the really interesting thing was that was one of the first things I did when I realized my whole life was going to be remote meetings, was I realized I needed to decorate my room and just go plain white. But the one thing that people always notice is in my office, in my book library, they're all really ordered and they're color coordinated. And it's really interesting because that's not me, but I think that was me at the start of lockdown when I just felt I needed some order and I needed some clarity.
I'll just step out of the way.
Ah, there you go. Yours is also colour coordinated.
Yeah, that's not me either.
Isn't it funny how things change? Yeah, because the rest of my life, it's just full of, you know, spontaneity and everything. But I think that is a reflection of where I was at the start of lockdown. And that even itself is a great opening to a coaching style conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to make it more personal so people can have conversations about things that they want to, key in on things. And I'm not so distracting, but it's, you know, it gives people that that personality, if you like.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And yeah, back in the when people are in the office, you just don't get to see that side of them, that personality, especially when people will be hot desking and they have to clear their desk away at the end of the day. So we have to find ways to have that human conversation and maybe even learn how to do small talk, intentional small talk again. Because it's a skill that maybe we've lost. Who knows? So just tell me a little bit about your business mission. I read it in the introduction, but I love the fact that you stand by people who strive to make the world a better place. I mean, that's huge. But tell me a little bit more about the feeling or the intention behind that.
I think, you know, we're in the leadership business, and our kind of one-liner is that the world needs a new kind of leader. And we think it's you because you have the capability, and it really comes around, do you have the capability and are you aligned to a greater good? And if we're thinking greater good, then we're thinking about the team, the stakeholders that work with us, that and then in that case, we're being a leader. All too often, we see examples, both on your side of the pond and mine, of leaders that it feels like they're all about themselves, or they're all about a small subset of themselves. And we see this a lot in the States, where some of our politicians they're professional politicians, and their job is to get reelected. And they'll do and say whatever it takes to get reelected, rather than there's a really old Jim Stewart film called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which is back in the day when some just everyday Joe would go to Washington to the Senate and truly be looking and looking after and representing the people. And that's where we see leadership is. If you're a leader, you need to think about the people that you're connected with, and that's your job, is to make sure that everybody within that set is successful. And as you probably find as well, we'd be talking to somebody about a manufacturing job or, you know, finance, where IT, wherever it is, and they'll say, oh, I could use this with my kids. And when they say that, the sparks go off in my heart, and it warms my heart to that say, if you're going to go use this with your kids, that's outstanding. I was talking to a client last week who's actually working through the 7 habits with his grandson. And he chose the 7 habits for highly effective teens. And he said, we're going to work on this together. We're going to meet once a week. We're going to do X amount of chapters. And if you complete it, and they got the workbook version, if you complete it, I'll give you $100. Wow. And he said, so I've got an incentive, but he says the incentive is less important to him than the relationship with a grandson and talking about some solid principles for life and together. And I thought, what a magical moment that is, of somebody who's taking some principles that they've learned or studied at work and taking it home to a relationship that, you know, that grandkid will remember grandpa talking about that. And you never know, maybe he'll do the same thing with his grandkids.
It's a legacy, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. And so our work goes beyond you're making nuts and bolts, let's make more nuts and bolts, to you're building relationships and you're a leader in a whole set of places in the world. Make sure that you're the best that you can be in all of those places.
Oh, I love that. No, that is amazing. And, you know, for me, my tagline as such is to create a leadership ripple effect. And then I go on to say that impacts people's work, their lives, communities, and ultimately the world. Yeah. Because that's how I see it. When you learn how to lead and be the leader yourself, you can't stop leading. You don't suddenly say, right, I'm at home and now I'm at work, I'm a friend. You're actually the same person, because you're just authentic. you're just completely balanced and this is who I am. And they're the kind of leaders that we do need, that who are honest, who are grounded, who are values driven, and like you and I have a mission.
Yeah. And that mission involves the people who are naturally connected to them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, these days, those kinds of people don't get elected.
No. And so. it's they're all there for the next 4 years. What promises can I make for the next four years? That's why us as citizens, as workers, as communities need to raise our voices. And this is something that I'm seeing again when we talk about the younger generation. Actually, they are very vocal. And we've also started to see even, you know, some employee activism where they're calling out on social media their employers and saying no more. And at the moment it's Amazon. A few weeks ago it was BrewDog were being called out. Leaders are being held to account. We just need to make sure that we do it for those who are in our biggest institutions.
Yeah, my youngest son, Joe, lives in Bingley in the north of England, and he's a Labour lawyer, and as in works for the union. And he's just been working for the last year or so to get pay parity for a NHS derivative, because they span off a hospital and paid them less because they weren't the formal NHS.
Wow.
And so these people have been doing the same job as their colleagues for less money, all through the same time as we've been standing outside applauding them for being the essential workers. And he's just got them to agree to parity their pay. In my mind, that's leadership, taking a stand on something like that, not being fussed that grandma disagreed with him pushing it towards a strike, but saying this is the right thing for these people and I'm willing to stand up here and be counted. And I'm going to keep pushing. And if I lose my future job because this doesn't work, then so be it. But his belief in the people he was working for, in my mind, is what the legacy of leadership should be all about.
And really interestingly, I was looking at LinkedIn and somebody had done some one of these LinkedIn polls, and it had said, what are the biggest qualities that you want from your leader? And the most people chose the courage to take bold action. And that's exactly what your son has demonstrated. True leadership really is. It's about saying, this is not the easy route, but it is the right route. And that's why we're heading in this direction. So I salute you as a parent, and I salute your son for being so awesome. So just tell me then, obviously you've got the book that's out there, but what else is your focus right now? What's going on for you and your team members?
Well, we're busy onboarding our new business and marketing manager, of course, but and really getting out here and hawking the book a little bit, because What Great Teams Do Great was released in April 2020. Which was the worst time possible to release a book and be hoping to go out and be doing book tours with it and things like that. But then what also happened is not long after the release, we got approached by a local nonprofit organization here saying, we think you've missed an opportunity. And it was like, okay, tell me more. And they said, you've not in any place in this book addressed the impact of race and power. And it was like, holy cow, no, we haven't. And so I sat down with a number of DEI leaders over here, the diversity, inclusion, equity, and said, how's this look? And so in June last year, we released chapter 9, which is the dynamics of race and power on What Great Teams Do Great. And that's available for download from our website, humanergy.com. And then the next thing that happened in the fall of last year was, ooh, this is kind of interesting. What's happening with remote teams now? and you didn't address it in your book. And so we sat down and wrote chapter 10, which is What Great Teams Do Great and being remote and how to lead remote teams. And that's available if people send me an email. So I will respond with a copy of that book. If they send an email to me at david@humanergy.com, we'll give them the 10th chapter.
But oh, that's wonderful. I'll make sure those are all in the show notes as well, so people can get in contact with you. So that's a great offer. Oh, and I just want to just reflect on there just for a second, is what you've just talked about there is the reality of leadership right now. which is you are going to be working in and leading in a volatile world, an uncertain one, which is complex and ambiguous. And you might put something out there and then have to go back and edit it and redo it. And you almost have to just let go of what's been before and just say, right, okay, this is the new challenge. Let's do it. And you've demonstrated that beautifully.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that's the reality of it, isn't it? You know, because who knows what's going to come out next year, and you might need to write another chapter, but hey ho, let's just go for it.
Well, exactly. It gave us the opportunity to say, let's not get discouraged, because, you know, we still want people to buy the book and it's still absolutely worth it, but let's make sure that we're addressing these issues and getting them out there. And both those extra chapters say, please read the book first, because it'll make more sense. But, you know, we could wait for a second edition, but it's all going to be out of date by then. It's kind of like when people say, when should I do team building? Because I've got one person leaving and I haven't got the next person joining for 6 months. And it's like, you can't find the perfect time. So just do it. And then as things change, do a little refresher, because when anybody leaves or joins a team, the team changes. And so do something again at that point, but don't wait for that perfect moment, because it'll never happen.
Totally. Oh, it's been so wonderful talking to you. And I'll make sure, like I said, that links to the book and to your email address for that extra chapter are all put on there. But yeah, it's been wonderful to talk to you. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Well, as always, we covered a lot of topics in that conversation. Hit that subscribe button and check out the Leader X book. And if you really want to upskill yourself and your teams, head to the website to see over 50 courses that can help you become a better leader. Just head to www.3wh.uk.com. That's the number 3 and the letters W and H. And until next time, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Leader X podcast. The Leader X podcast is a Gifted Gab production for 3WH.